Chasing Big Joe, 102.5, 106.3, the game on this Wednesday. The Titans have made it official. Brian Callahan is their new head coach. Rand Carthon, now the executive vice president and general manager. Chad Brinker, the president of football operations. We bring in John McClain to talk more about this. John, first of all, thank you for your assistance in getting Coach Gary Kubiak on yesterday. He was excellent.
Good. Gary's always really good. He likes talking about guys he worked with. It's another branch of his coaching tree. Here he had Matt LaFleur, Mike McDaniel, Kyle Shanahan, and Robert Saleh. It was an amazing staff, as you can imagine. And now, because he had Callahan in Denver, he's got a fifth head coach he worked with.
So now that they've made it official, what do you think about this power structure that basically gives Rand Carthon the final say when it comes to building the football team, including the roster, scouting, all of that? Now the GM is in control and the head coach reports to him.
Well, that's the way it's supposed to be. Our general manager, he's supposed to oversee the coaching staff. It never works well when both people are like talking to the owner. One person's got to be in charge. And I'm not, even though a lot of head coaches like Andy Reid, Bill Belichick, Pete Carroll, Sean Payton, there's a lot of coaches that have GMs that have or had in their contracts, they control all personnel. And but you need it in a contract of a GM, like here. Nick Caserio has it in his contract. He has final say on all personnel. So you just have to make sure you work well with your head coach. And Brian Callahan needed an experienced personnel guy. That's why the Raiders got Tom Telesco over Champ Kelly. You didn't want a first-time head coach and general manager. I saw it work well here with Kubiak and Rick Smith, but that's rare.
You know, John, we were talking earlier about, you know, turning around a team in one season. I think you told us earlier in our talk that you had the Texans winning, what, three or four games this year, correct?
Yeah, the Texans won 11 games this year, which is as many as they won the last 3 years combined.
Yeah, so the thing was like, you know, it could take years to turn a franchise around, but you saw firsthand in Texans and Houston how you can turn a team around in a year, correct?
Well, you got D'Amico Ryans, who turned out to be even better than what we thought he would be, because you never know about an assistant coach who's never been a head coach. You never know about a play caller who's never called plays. And D'Amico hired Bobby Slowick with him, who came from the 49ers to call plays, and Ryan's made the calls on defense, and nobody had any idea C.J. Stroud was going to be as good as he was. But a lot of players developed under Ryan's and this coaching staff that had been on the team who had not. And everybody thought they had one of the two worst rosters in the NFL. That's why most people picked them to finish with the second worst record, and then they won 11 games. So it can be done, but, man, you got to have the quarterback. Callahan has a history of working with quarterbacks. Now he's got to, and I don't know if it's the case, but if he wants his daddy to coach the offensive line because he's one of the best line coaches in the league, I can't imagine Cleveland would force him to stay and miss an opportunity to be with his son. I don't know if they want to coach together, but if they did get Bill Callahan, that's better than any player they could get in the offensive line.
John, in your opinion, how much is it important that if a guy's looking at a team, that they've got a quarterback already in place? Because is that what puts the guy over the top? Is that what makes reevaluate the franchise? Obviously, with Levis here, and he's shown flashes of being good, is that huge? Is that like the thing that a new coach needs to have going in?
If Brian Callahan had said in his interview, and he's a very personable guy, well, I don't believe we can win with Will Levis. I had him rated as a third or fourth round pick. Then I doubt seriously he's going to get the job. You hope that he had Levis rated highly like everybody did. You know, I had Levis going in the first round in all nine mock drafts I did, and I was stunned when he didn't go in the first round. So you look at Levis's size, his arm strength, his mobility, his toughness. I would imagine that Callahan can't wait to work with him, mold him, and the experience that he got last season as a rookie bodes very well for this season. Now, Callahan's going to call plays. He's not called plays. You never know for sure until he does it. But and I'm sure, you know, they want to run the ball. And I wish they had Derrick Henry back to run the ball, because I think Derrick Henry, as he showed when he had that long run and ran fourth fastest in the NFL, he can still do it. But they're going to have to work on the offensive line. And that's why getting a good offensive line coach is paramount to anything they want to do in an attempt to turn it around quickly.
We're talking to John McClain, sportsradio610.com in Houston. That's where you can find his work, at McClain underscore on underscore NFL on X or Twitter. When it comes to offensive coordinator, you just mentioned Brian Callahan's going to call plays. That's what we see with these guys, that the head coach ends up calling the plays. But do you think it's more important for Callahan to bring in somebody that he's comfortable with to be the OC, to bring in somebody that Levis is comfortable with to be the OC, or to bring in somebody like Thomas Brown to be the OC that maybe has an outside view on things?
Thomas Brown's called plays once and he got demoted. And I would want somebody proven, and then maybe he likes Thomas Brown, but I would want somebody who, like Callahan, had a great track record of working with quarterbacks, because the play caller, whether he's the offensive coordinator or the head coach, he has to look at the big picture and deal with all the positions, where in this case, the offensive coordinator is going to be like a glorified quarterback coach. He's going to spend a lot of time with the quarterbacks. So whoever they hire has got to be somebody who believes in Will Levis, has followed his career, and believes that is on the same wavelength is Callahan when it comes to Will Levis. And I don't think it's going to be hard to get somebody to agree that Levis has all kinds of potential and wants to work with it.
We're talking to John McClain this morning here on the Chase and Big Joe Show. All right, so now the places are you know, going forward there, John. If you're Callahan, what's the first order business you do? I mean, do you sit down with Rand?
You got to get a defensive coordinator, because you got to move. One of the reasons I'm sure they hired him when they did, they wanted to move quickly. They liked him. They didn't want him to get out of the building because other teams were interested. Now he's got to move to get coaches. Every guy who wants to be a head coach has a list, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, of people he wants for every position. So it's not like he's going to come in and sit down with Carthar and go, okay, well, let me see. What about this guy or that guy? He's got his list, and when you don't get him, you cross him off. He's got to get a good offensive line coach. He's got to have a good defensive coordinator, and he may keep some of the guys that are on the staff. And then he's got to make sure, because he can't spend all his time working with the quarterbacks, he gets a good coordinator who's going to work with the quarterbacks and a good quarterback coach who can work with the quarterback and the coordinator. And he's got his list, and I'm guessing he's going to be moving fast to get the coaches he wants.
I remember Floyd telling me one time that, you know, kind of in the old days when a guy was getting hired to be a head coach for the first time, that he had his list, but the staff was kind of picked for him, that, you know, the GM had a lot of influence on the staff. Floyd obviously had coached, so he knew a lot of people to kind of help Jeff through all of that. Do you think that's still the case in some ways? Or, like you said, the coach shows up with his list and he's going to build his staff the way he wants it?
Absolutely not. And if you do that, it's a recipe for disaster. I remember one year Floyd fired a couple of assistants. Jeff came to Bud Adams' office unannounced and fought to get those guys rehired. A couple he did. And then Jeff, when he went to the Super Bowl, made sure to get in his contract. He had control over the coaches. No GM should have control over assistant coaches. It's the head coach who should have that control. And if it doesn't work out, you fire the head coach. But that's terrible when a GM is getting rid of coaches that the head coach wants to keep.
We'll have more with John McClain coming up next, including what's the latest with Bobby Slowick. We'll do that here on the Chase and Big Joe Show, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Chase and Big Joe broadcasting from the Spring Hill Heating and Cooling Game Nashville Studios, keeping your home feeling comfortable all year round. Continuing our conversation with John McClain from Houston. So Bobby Slowick, I'm seeing, is going to get an in-person interview with the Falcons. I think he's had an in-person interview with the Commanders. I know we've talked about him with you that maybe he needs another year as a coordinator, but do you feel like he's going to get a job in this cycle, or could everything, you know, move through and he ends up coming back to the Texans?
There's a lot of coaches getting second interviews so they can do it in person, including Slowick. And I'm writing a column today for SportsRadio610.com, where there's no paywall, about why Slowick should come back for a year, because he did a really good job overseeing the offense and the passing game. Running game was mediocre at best, terrible a lot. So how does he sell his running game? He had some play calls left us scratching our heads. But I think that one more year, and I think I mentioned this before, Ben Johnson of the Lions, Kevin O'Connell of the Vikings, and D'Amico Ryans of the Texans did interviews and thought they needed to go back to coordinator jobs for another year to get that experience. And it worked out great. And since Slowick has Stroud, and Ryans is obviously a great young coach, that the odds are the offense is going to be good again next year, and he'll have more opportunities.
John, we were talking, Chase and I, the other day after the divisional rounds about Patrick Mahomes and the win in Buffalo. And I was saying, besides the two Super Bowl wins that he's got, that win in Buffalo's got to be just right underneath there, because it quelled the whole thing of, like, you know, can he win on the road in the playoffs? And that was one heck of a performance by that football team on Sunday.
Absolutely, Joe. Defense is playing great. Isaiah Pacheco ran the ball hard. Andy Reid had some really boneheaded decisions, like Mecole Hardman letting him run the ball twice and he fumbled both times. I guarantee he ain't running the ball in this game. And then, of course, Sean McDermott, you know, that fake kick was terrible. There were issues in on play calling or clock or game management, also with Dan Campbell. And so I think this, I'll tell you a story. Mattress Mack, our foremost bettor in the country, gambler, he and I do a video once a week on what's going on in sports. And he told me he met Mahomes 2 years ago. Mack bet on Cincinnati over Kansas City. And he met Mahomes at the Kentucky Derby. And he said, man, you cost me a lot of money. And he said, well, never bet against me. So last week, Mack asked me, who are you betting on? I said, Buffalo, 6 wins in a row. Josh Allen's playing great. They're at home. The misery ends. They win. And he went with Kansas City because he ain't betting against the Chiefs. Now, I didn't ask him what he's doing on Sunday. Personally, I think Baltimore will win. But if Mahomes pulls it out, I don't believe any of us will be surprised.
Is more pressure Sunday on Baltimore or Kansas City?
Baltimore. Kansas City's been there and done that multiple times. Baltimore, Lamar Jackson just had his second playoff win. He had his second win, his first win in a divisional playoff game. And the most unbelievable stat that I've seen of all of them, this is the first time Baltimore's hosted a NFC championship game since 1971, when I was a senior in high school. And I think that it's much more pressure on Lamar Jackson. And if he wins this game to go to the Super Bowl, you know, you want to be a great quarterback, you got to win playoff games, and you don't have to win a Super Bowl, because we got Hall of Fame quarterbacks who didn't win a Super Bowl. But man, if you want to be great, you got to at least get there.
Okay, so along those same lines, in the NFC, more pressure on Detroit or San Francisco?
I think San Francisco, because Detroit's playing with house money, an incredible success story. They were supposed to win the division. You know, I get people talking about Dan Campbell's coach of the year. That voting's over. It was done after regular season. And I say, well, they were supposed to win the division. How can he be coach of the year over some of these guys that went, like D'Amico Ryans, 3-11 victories. So I think that Kyle Shanahan who's been there seven seasons. They lose a lot of front office executives and players. I think they are under more pressure. Brock Purdy's under a lot of pressure. We got former first overall pick to the former Mr. Irrelevant going at it. So I believe it's the 49ers.
John, I want to get your thoughts on, because you're a Hall of Fame voter, you know, in pro football, but the Baseball Hall of Fame came out yesterday. Todd Helton, who played at the University of Tennessee, Joe Mauer, and Adrian Beltre. And I kind of look at, you know, the Baseball Hall of Fame, and these guys were all very, very good. And, I mean, you look at some of the numbers, and you can, I guess, make an argument. But I feel like it doesn't blow me away anymore. And I wonder if it's because they're dealt with every year having to, you know, analyze some of these guys from the steroid era that they don't want to let in. What's kind of your thoughts on the evaluation process and getting a guy in the Hall of Fame? And is it in some ways becoming the Hall of really, really good?
It's Adrian Beltre was a lock, and Helton. One of the things I see before the Baseball Hall of Fame, the voters, and I think there's 383 as opposed to 48 of us on the Pro Football Hall of Fame selection committee, and they vote anonymously. Where we're constantly emailing each other, reducing our ballot. We talk in press boxes. I talk Paul Kaharsky because he's on the committee about it. And then we have our big meeting, a Zoom, in which we'll kick things around and argue, where they vote anonymously. And it's amazing to me, Todd Helton I saw in his first year of eligibility, I believe it was like in 19, he had like 9%. And he just kept going up each year because analytics helped him. And analytics is used a lot in baseball. And so they talked. I saw a story about who should make it next year based on analytics. And I didn't look at those guys and go, man, that's a Hall of Famer. You know, it's like the eye test doesn't matter anymore. It's all about war and war plus. And so many people don't have a clue what wins above replacement plus is. And I don't like it. Yeah, I'm still mad because Billy Wagner, one of the all-time great closers, missed by five votes. And whether if Helton had not made it or Mauer, and Mauer played a big portion of his career where he was not a catcher, I wouldn't have been surprised. But I'm always happy that guys get in because people making those decisions know more about it than I do, even though I am a diehard baseball fan.
You know, also with the Pro Football Hall of Fame, John, I love the fact that they, you know, it's been a while now, they came up with the seniors and coach contributor category to get those guys in the Hall of Fame because there are so many deserving guys. I am on the thing to get Too Tall Jones in the Hall of Fame. I think he deserves being in the Hall of Fame, but I'm so glad they've got the senior part of that where we can vote on that, where you guys can, to get some of these guys that are so deserving to get in the Hall of Fame.
And I'm on the seniors committee, and I'm not on the coach last contributors committee, but both of our committees get together and we have a list of finalists. In seniors case, we do three, and I'd love to see Too Tall get in there. And so we put a lot of work into it before we get to our big meeting. And so it's very thorough, exhaustive. It's an incredible honor. You know, I presented Andre Johnson 3 years in a row. Texans never had anybody in the Hall of Fame. I hope like crazy he gets in. I won't know till we all know on the honors show. But it's an enormous responsibility. And if you present a guy like I did Chuck Halley, the Cowboys, the senior nominee last year, and he got in, and even though he had Alzheimer's and didn't know where he was, his family was so excited and so appreciative. 50 years after he retired, he'd never been a finalist on the modern era or a senior, and he was. And I asked to present him because I saw every game he played because I was a diehard Cowboy fan growing up in Waco, Texas. And so when that family was so excited and appreciative and invited me to come up there twice, and I just, it's so rewarding when you present somebody who gets in the Hall of Fame.
How many years do you need? Like, I'm looking at Gale Sayers, one of the best ever, only played six seasons. Is there a parameter or something you got to fit into?
No.
Nothing?
No. It's an eye test. Anybody, and I used to watch Gale Sayers score six touchdowns in a game, and then he got his knee blown out on a hit by 49ers corner Kermit Alexander. If we'd had the operating procedures, scopes, and rehab and everything today, he would have continued to play. But you could watch him and know he was one of the all-time great. So there's some guys that didn't play long who dominated their sport, like Gale Sayers or Terrell Davis, the best running back in the playoffs I've ever seen, who got in. Tony Boselli didn't play long, but he was the best left tackle in the NFL when he did play. So we study. It's harder for those guys, and they have to wait longer, but there's no criteria. You just got to get 80% of the votes.
Well, that's good, because one of my all-time favorite players is Dwight Stevenson, and he had only 8 seasons in the NFL and the injury the last couple of years. But guys like that, John, and I'm so glad you're on that committee, that these guys deserve to get in the Hall of Fame, because the eye test, they were hell of a players.
And one of the reasons Dwight Stevenson got in is because a lot of people that went against him talked about how dominant of center he was when he was healthy. And he, of course, deserved to be in, and I'm glad he got in.
John, we're appreciative of you as always, and going to be interesting to see what this new era of the Titans looks like. But thanks so much. We'll talk next week.
People ought to be very fired up about Brian Callahan and what's in store. What he did with Jake Browning last year was amazing. I mean, you and Joe could coach. You guys could coach Joe Burrow. But, man, he really distinguished himself with Browning. Guys, thank you very much as always.
Absolutely. John McClain joining us, sportsradio610.com. That's where you can find his work. We'll have more reaction. Brian Callahan, officially the new head coach of the Tennessee Titans, and we know the power structure. We'll talk about that next. Chase and Big Joe, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.